Hi. Did you know that you can watch Last Podcast on the Left and Side Stories on our Patreon right now?
Yes, that's patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft. But over on TikTok, you can see the hottest, tightest, funniest clips from the show right there.
It's TikTok.
TikTok. It's at LP on the Left. It's the same as our Instagram. You already follow the Instagram. Why don't you go follow TikTok?
But it's on TikTok.
Yeah, because seeing is believing.
Yep.
So just go check it out. Watch it.
Go send our podcast to China.
I love TikTok the Crocodile. It's my favorite TikTok.
That's the only one he knows.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the Last Podcast
on the Left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
There's a lot of ways you can go. Because I feel like that's my dream, is that we get like Hellman's Mayonnaise.
Totally.
Like that's what I want. Yeah. I want you one big sponsor.
But what Depends. Would that sponsor be if it was, are we on yet? Okay.
Hi, everybody. We'll start when we start. It's fine. We're just doing levels and stuff like that. But we, don't worry, it's off the record.
What is the sponsor of du jour for you guys? If you were like, we got the call that Hellman's Mayonnaise wants to sponsor Lost Podcast.
I'm more Boar's Head.
Yeah.
Boar's Head would be great. Sweet.
And I'm Miracle Whip.
Publix.
Yeah. Mm. See, that's divisive. Miracle Whip's already divisive.
Did you say Publix?
Yeah, Publix.
Publix grocery store chain.
Yeah, that's yeah, I'm big Publix.
Incredible.
Yeah,
I once left a script in a grocery cart at a Publix, like a locked secret script, like because I was just reading it. They'd printed it for me to read as I was prepping to go do this thing, and I was in Atlanta. And this is, you know, those yes. things are given to you under threat of death. Like, mm-hmm. you yes. do not lose this.
Yeah,
so no. I'm shopping in a Publix, and I really liked their deli section. The fried chicken, Friday
so
night
good.
Meal.
Oh,
they
Jesus.
Would have great
yes.
sides.
Yes.
And I was all excited about that, and I got a slice of, like, rainbow cake from the bakery.
Yeah,
and buddy. I treated myself to some yummy things I was going to take back to my hotel. And I get back to the hotel, and I sleep. Lay out this really luxurious spread of grocery store fried chicken and mac and cheese and probably get in my underwear, flip open the laptop, ready for a night of documentaries. And then all of a sudden, I go, where's my script? I need to... Oh, my God.
And it's like a top secret. Like, it's like one of
and
those.
And I
like...
ran like chariots of freaking fire. Like, I ran... I'll never forget the dread in my body thinking like someone's going to, because it has my name all over it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's got very crucial like plot details of things that would be like a big, 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 big problem for
yeah,
me.
People would be mad. People talk about that. Like the people finding scripts in trash cans and shit. Like they pull it out of the, and then all of a sudden it's all over the internet.
Yeah. Like a cache of Polaroids that I just happened to leave around.
Hey, man,
I,
you
like,
gotta bring
them. Understand that,
how else do you sleep?
Mm-mm. Yeah.
If you would have left the script at Winn-Dixie, you'd have nothing to worry about because they can't read.
Welcome to the Last Podcast on the Left, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Marcus Parks. I'm here with Henry Zebrowski, Ed Larson.
Hello.
And Henry, would you like to introduce today's guest?
Now we have what I'd say, I actually said this the other day, the modern Lon Chaney. Guy, the genre Lord Prince, right?
I thought you said the modern Dick Cheney.
No. That's for private. Again, he had a lot of good ideas, and he actually thought about the country. But yeah, that's a good way to start.
That just gave me a guest boner.
The fact
that you introduced me as Lon, like our Lon Chaney.
This is David Dustmalchian.
Oh, hi. Hey, hi, guys.
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited every time I think about the fact that we're friends now, because having been so obsessed with the way that you guys have done what you've done and loved the show for so long. And then the fact that it was Eve's like passion and she kept being like, Dave, you have to get into Last Podcast. And I was like, I don't, when I'm working or when I'm writing, I put on music. I don't listen to podcasts. I'm not really into the podcasting thing. Years ago. And she's just like, no, David, this is for you. This is
great.
And she and her best friend, Karen, were just like every time. And then I finally was like, you know what? Fine. Forget it.
Fine.
I'll listen to these chuckleheads. And then, and now I'm here. I'm so excited. And thank you for that introduction. It means a lot. I really appreciate it.
No, dude. I mean, honestly, going back through all of your work, you're here technically to promote your new film, Late Night with the Devil, which is going to be very, very exciting for the people that are at home. Because, like, we are the people who listen to our show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love the mill. I made it halfway through and I shut it off because I was like, I'm going to see this in the theater. I'm going to pay money to go see this.
It looks unbelievable.
That's like a great, great compliment. It's also, I've never heard that before. And you go like, God, because people will say, like, I watched your thing and it was so awesome. But have someone say to you, I was watching your thing and I stopped it.
Yeah, because I can't do the laptop with the movies. It disappoints me. I want it either on the screen, either because I have a big TV. I'm humble brag.
Oh, yeah.
But I, because that's what I want, right? Actually, I think I can have a
do
bigger
TV. Do you measure
TV.
Each other's?
I measure by eyesight.
Whose is bigger?
Mine's bigger.
He does have the biggest television.
I've been in your home.
Yes, you have.
Have I been to your home? I haven't been to your home.
I've been outside of your house.
Marcus.
You see my TV.
I've been invited over to your house. I've been to parties in your home. I've seen your TV. I've seen your vinyl collection. Henry, it's begging for an invitation.
No, you come over.
You guys have been to my house numerous times.
Love it. Yeah. You have for people.
Big TV.
But you, but
you don't need one.
You don't. You live in a very cool, spooky house.
Now, one of the things, my favorite thing about your house is your wall of like horror sound effects records.
Yes.
Like, it's just amazing. Like, you've got like a musical seance from Rosemary Brown, which is one of my favorite records ever. It's like this amazing compilation from this woman who said that she could channel the spirits of dead composers.
That's awesome.
And she would write her own, like, she's like, okay, this is what Beethoven wants me to write, and she would write some in the style of Beethoven. This is what Mozart wants me to write, then write some, and it came with like a full booklet and everything. It's musical seance. That's when I was like, I like this guy.
I grew up in Kansas, and this is so obsessed with all things horror once I got the bug. But then at our local Montgomery Ward, there was this vinyl record with a picture of Dracula on the cover and blood dripping down. And it said like the Monster Mash and Sounds of Halloween or whatever. And I was like, what is this? And I begged and begged and begged and begged. And it was a pretty religious household where like Halloween was not celebrated. I was the one decorating the front yard and pissing off my parents because I made such a big deal out of it. And my father finally relented, which he rarely ever did, and he got me this record. I brought it home. I put it right on the record player. I started listening to it, and it scared me so, so bad that I was crying, and my mom was furious. My dad, she's like, see, this is what happens. So then she had him take it back, get a refund, and they got me some bubblegum pop Halloween album of, you know, funny, goofy songs. But
it's a mummy and Frankenstein is there.
I also love those. Those are great.
Yeah, those are amazing.
But I eventually really regretted that, and now it's a lifetime obsession. I collect Halloween vinyl, and I'm so lucky I have the wife partner that I have in Eve, that she would not only like proudly display her nerd ass husband's Halloween record collection, but that she'd frame them and you know, mount them so beautifully.
Well, I say that about Natalie, about how, like, if you weren't in for this whole package, I don't know what you're in here for.
Yeah.
You know, like, is it?
Head scratcher sometimes.
Yeah, it is goth turtles all the way down if you get into this home.
No, I love those records. You just put them on and it's just.
Yeah. And there was so many variations and hard to find ones. And I mean, and a lot of the actors
one shock that's just a bunch of screaming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The actors that I love did a lot of cool shit on the side, or these were great recording studios. It would come that time of year. It was a money thing that they could be like, oh, we're going to make a cool spooky record. But like, oh my God, Boris Karloff speaks. Peter Lorre had his own. There was great ones.
Yeah, have you not done this?
We got to do this.
You need a spooky album.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. All right. Like, we need to
produce it. I would love to,
because it's like a couple scary stories and then like a just sound effects.
Yeah, Marcus
and like,
loves weird noises.
That's most of what he listens to.
Yeah.
What's the spookiest noise?
The spookiest sound that a person can hear?
As a spooky sound collector.
I think it is There's this one album that really messed me up as a kid, and it was on that same record that I told you guys about. And I think it was the moment that it turned for me. And it was a werewolf eating an infant.
Whoa. Awesome.
Dude, yeah. I think I heard that.
Yeah, it's so messed up that they would put that on. And you hear the baby crying and like getting, you hear the crunching of the bones and the flesh. And I was just like, I'm not supposed to be. It's like Werner Herzog, you know, during Grizzly Man. It's like, this is not something that I am supposed to be hearing.
This
right
record,
now.
This record this is, of this moment this needs to be destroyed.
Timothy Treadwell is like what I was hearing. And it really messed me up, man. Yes. The suffering of children.
Yeah. All right. I think I may have heard that at one point.
Well, I'll play it for you because I own it.
Yeah, honestly, that'd be wonderful.
Just makes me hungry.
And during the Halloween season, it's fun because every night I try to put on a different record with the kids and they love it. And we'll carve pumpkins or just listen to the old records. It's great.
That's great.
So that's so wholesome.
Yeah.
So you came out.
You know me.
You came out the like the chasm spooky.
Yeah. I did. I think I came out the chasm spooky and like inclined towards whatever reasons why. Like it was always Halloween. It was always even the monsters on Scooby-Doo. It was anytime there was a Halloween episode of anything, I was just like, that was the thing I loved the most and wanted. But that was compounded by being raised in a very religious household. It was a very conservative community where Halloween and anything to do with horror or rock and roll was considered opening yourself up to the dark side. And of course, I'm of a spirit that when you lock a door, the first thing I'm going to do is look for the picks to grit in there. And then for me, the big impact was, you know, after schools, rushing home to be watching, you know, cartoons. And they would have these stingers on Fox 41 in Kansas City in the 80s, like at the end of like an episode of Transformers. It would be like, and tune in Friday night for Cremation Mortems, Friday Nightmare at 10 o'clock or 10:30. And so I started like sneaking down and just getting lost in the world of the horror host Cremation Mortem, who then, you know, shows me all the speaking of Hammer films, yes, like all the Hammer stuff and Universal stuff and RKO things and all the weird, obscure B and Z movies that I was just like.
And it was that obsession that got you for Late Night with the Devil, right? Because yeah, the movie, and this is not a joke, this is not a mean thing. It's essentially a hyper serious Repossessed.
Sure, exactly. Yeah.
You know, like
it's hyper serious Repossessed.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
Which I love
Repossessed.
But because you built a host character, like a talk show host character, which is super funny and it feels lived in.
Thanks.
But it kind of came from this kind of education as a kid with horror hosts.
Sure. So the horror host thing, in a more direct way, it's what got me the job because after my mom passed, I did a lot of reflecting upon like, oh, why have I always been so obsessed with horror? I was thinking that kind of drove my mom crazy. But we did bond a few times. Like I remember once watching Psycho with her. She let me watch that and like holding my hand when I was a kid because I got scared. And then I was thinking about that maternal or paternal or whatever figure, that Karen that takes you into the safely across the river, who was the horror host, which for me was Cremation. She was the first, a lot of things for me, like first crush, first impression of this like sexuality that I was really turned on by, this first safe person that would make dumb jokes about, you know, whatever we were watching that night or whatever I was watching, you know, if it didn't matter. She was the safe person for that. So I wrote this article.
For
Fangoria, and Phil Nobile Jr., who is the editor there, had said, if you ever want to write something, let me know. And I was like, I feel like I've got an article that could be interesting. And I told him my pitch and he was like, go for it. So I wrote this article about horror hosts and that relationship that they can have with us. And then the guys, Colin and Cameron Cairns, who live in Australia and are just horror nerds, cinemaphiles, incredible, really talented, wonderful guys. They read Fangoria and they read that article and they were like, that's the guy we want, which is weird because when you who are listening see this movie, you're going to say, who in the fuck thought Dave Dasmalchian for this role? Because I know I fit into a certain target, I guess, when you think about the kinds of roles maybe that I normally approach or what people think of me as. I as a casting director, producer, would never have thought in looking at this script, you know who we got to get? let's get that Desmalchian guy on the phone.
Yeah, like, we gotta get it. Because you're not...
He's charming.
Is it an insult to say that you're creepy?
I'm creepy. I mean, I am embraced what I have, and I am grateful for it. The way that I like to... I hope this doesn't sound like self... whatever. It sounds really gross to compare yourself to people who are legends, but I guess I could say I aspire to heroes like Chris Lee and Vincent Price and Lon Chaney, the ultimate hero to me, because he just disappeared into the roles and genre. I just have no, my nose will never be lifted to anything in any space that's good storytelling. I would much rather do an incredibly well-executed genre piece than a mediocre melodrama.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I
when you're eventually in the Jerry Lee Lewis biopic.
That's right.
Yes.
The Tiny Tim biopic.
Float that out there.
There we go.
Let's make that happen, guys.
You know about his haunting, right?
I don't.
You know how he died?
Yes. Yeah.
He didn't actually die because the legend is that Tiny Tim died during the performance on stage.
Was it at a retirement home?
It was at like some sort of like Masonic lodge or something like that. Yeah. Where like it was a bunch of like ladies that wanted to do something nice booked him. The problem was that not enough people showed up, so the show got canceled, and so he was just there in this Masonic lodge and famously died there. And to this day, you can still hear his voice.
There's the sound. That's the scariest sound.
It's Tiny Tim singing Tiptoe. But yeah, supposedly he haunts the Masonic Lodge where he died.
Well, if I were to get the honor of playing Tiny Tim someday, once I was approached for a biopic. This is a true story. I'll send you guys the email that I got, and you can post it. It was to play Michael Jackson.
Amazing.
Yeah. And problem is that like, it's like, you know, you just see all the calls from your people and you're trying to sit here and figure out, like, is this what I wanted to, is this what I'm doing? So I guess I'm post Pepsi Ed, Michael. Is that what I am? I'm heal the world, Michael.
Yeah. When you get emails like that, can you ask like curiosity follow-up questions? Knowing that you're not going to do it.
All I said was, let's do this. Yeah. And we are the world. And then I said, let me know. And I never heard back from this. It was a guy in across the world somewhere.
I bet you
named Leanne Landry, I think was his name. I don't remember, but I remember getting that email and being so touched. It was probably a DM. I don't even know if it was an email, but it was like a very like formal approach to like, this is really something that we feel strongly that you would do well. But I'm honored. I love the idea. I mean, I come from a theater background. And again, I'm raised watching Lon Chaney and other actors that can quote unquote transform whatever that means, because you're still bringing a lot of yourself and who you are as a person into each role that you're playing. And you're trying to bring all of your history and your dynamics physically and vocally. But I love this notion, this idea that you could be watching something and be like, that looks like that guy that was the crazy guy in The Dark Knight, or that looks like that guy that was on the Ant-Man movies. That can't be that guy, because that's his voice or the way he laughs or the thing. All that is so, it's such a challenge that I love so much. So when Late Night with the Devil, when these guys, they were working with, they're working with Steven Schneider and Roy Lee, who owns Spooky Pictures. And Roy Lee is this incredible longtime friend of mine who just sent me the script and their pitch deck. And he said, hey, these guys would like for you to be in their film. And I thought, as I heard the log line, I was again going back to like, what about this guy, Dave Desmalchian, that we know and love, makes you think he's the guy to be a late night talk show host? Because late night talk show hosts are charming and they're fun. You guys are talk show hosts in a way. And you're charming and you're funny and you're sweet, but luckily you're mostly off camera.
Yes, that's the idea.
No, I think I just was baffled by it. And as soon as I started reading the script and looking at their materials, I was hooked. I was like, I got to do this. And so then I just dove into, on a nightly basis, watching hours of what I could scrap up on YouTube, from Don Lane episodes to Carson monologues and Letterman monologues.
That's great.
Trying to manufacture this notion of like a guy who could do that. It's very weird.
Because it's an entire separate skill set of performance.
Totally.
It is another type of performer, because as a late night talk show host, you have to be broad, let people in. You're going into people's living room each night, so it's supposed to kind of feel like that. Somebody you trust, who's also like improv, like he's like fun in the moment. you know, but you do a great job of
making
one of my favorite pieces is the montage of the previous episodes of all the dumb shit that has happened in all the seasons. Yeah, yeah.
Which is very, in the face.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
the,
yeah. I love all of that.
What is the log line? Like, what's the concept behind this movie?
So, Jack Delroy, who I'm playing, it's 1977. He's like literally 40th in the ratings when Carson was like at number three. Mm-hmm. And his show is just on the chopping block. And he's had the worst run you can imagine. His wife, his life partner, his soulmate passed away tragically of cancer. He's kind of maligned in the press as like the second rate, you know, and he's going to be canceled any day. And so
I don't know what that's like.
Canceled in the 70s is like a whole nother thing.
Yeah, it's a different kind of canceling. Different kind of canceling. He's coming up on, it's Halloween night. He knows that call is coming any second. And so
It's sweeps week.
And so he needs a win. He needs the ratings to just skyrocket. And he throws everything he can possibly imagine at the stage that night, and including some choices that are compromising to maybe his ethical compass and compromising to what we would deem as like maybe, I guess, ethical as opposed to moral, but like definitely some real questionable choices of what he's willing to put up there to try and get those eyeballs. And things go far more well than he could have ever imagined as far as trying to create a night of shock television. And what is so wonderful about the way the script is constructed, and I hope people enjoy this as they fall into the mystery of it all, is under the immense pressure and the kind of fracturing of the nervous breakdown that he's having, coupled with his alcoholism, his perception just of ultimate reality is starting to become untethered. And you're watching the show happen in real time. So it's a 90-minute movie.
Yeah, it's a foot, because it's found
just
footage.
Like, yeah, it's wow. just like it's you're watching episode. An episode of the show. And so you've got, you know, good evening, Night Owls. And thanks again for being here. Wow, we had a big win this week with, you know, the Yankees. Any fans in the house tonight? Yeah, that was great. And he does a whole thing like that. And then we get these quick blips during commercial break where it's like, okay, we got to get to what's going on. And then people are talking backstage the energy is building and building and shit just goes bonkers, man.
Great. Yeah. You know, it's cool. I actually think that the character wasn't wrong. I think that's solid producing. And I actually would love to have an actual demon in here.
You know, an event in New York, and I was trying to get a real exorcist in to come and be part of the...
Convince these two, because I want to do a seance in here.
I don't want to do a seance. Let's do a seance somewhere else.
I want to go to the Mystic Museum down in Burbank. And I want to do a live seance.
I think that's a great idea.
I work here every day. Yeah. I don't want to have to deal with bullshit from ghosts.
Hey, man, they have unfinished business and they need to be monetized on the podcast.
I have deadlines.
Before we became friends, one of my Halloween gatherings included a seance that was kind of breaking some of the rules of seance etiquette, because it was a group of people around the table, but then there was like another 80 people
watching
from above and from the side, but it was just perfectly silent. The energy in the room was insane. It was a pendulum style. Oh. So there was a pendulum from the roof of the house that came all the way down to the table. And that when she began leading the event and the questions started, watching the way that it goes, and I'm sitting there being like, there's no way that anybody's touching this, because I'm here. And then at one point, and people were doing what you guys did, you fucking pussies. They were like,
that's me, man.
They were like, don't do this. Don't do this. This is a big mistake. And I'm like, oh, come on. It can't be blah, blah, blah. So it's going, and some question came up, I forget what it was. And we had candles up way up high in like the windowsills that you had to get like on a ladder to put up. And one fell on somebody's shoulder. The screams, people ran out of the house. Some have never come back.
Yeah.
Eve also tried to buy, she found on eBay, a supposedly cursed Ouija board. And that was the one where I did put my foot down a little bit. I was like, I feel like if it's already been deemed cursed? Like, what does that mean? Why would we want to buy that?
I got good advice. Storage unit.
Yeah, it is a real unit. No,
it's like that. My favorite show as a kid, which was Friday the 13th, the series, where you've got the like locked vault where Uncle Jack kept all of the cursed items from his curiosity shop. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to get. I'll get a storage unit, but it's in Glendale.
And then when I die,
no one will know about it. And they're going to do that, like, what's it called? Where they break
storage
it?
Wars.
Storage Wars. That's another movie, man. That is literally another film.
I love that. That is such
Haunted
a good show.
Haunted Storage Wars is amazing.
Haunted Storage Wars. It's an unscripted series that we didn't know we needed.
That's incredible. I got a good advice on how to handle cursed objects that I could give you off air. They talk about, like, because that's my goal. That's like one of the things I'd like to move towards is getting some, because we're supposed to get some in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
But it's at the P.O. box.
You would never be serious enough to do a seance. I know you. Because throughout the year, so many times, Henry's always like, I really want to make this episode, like, spooky and, like, creepy. And I, like, and I write it to, like, spooky and creepy. And then he comes in with some silly voice.
But the difference is that
Most
when we're...
the laugh, too.
But in a seance, you can't fuck around. But you can't, like, you can't fuck around in a seance.
Well, what if you get Jackie Gleason?
Yeah. He was very serious about aliens.
He was very serious about aliens.
He was.
Yeah, I feel like I could talk with him about that.
What am I? I'm reading something. I was going to ask you guys, have you read American Cosmic yet?
No.
Oh, okay, I just got it recommended. I figured you guys might know about it. I just started and I really liked it.
Have you
aliens.
Read 2083 Anders Breivik's Manifesto yet?
Not really.
I can send that in an email.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
New Declaration of Norwegian Independence.
Love that.
Live from your grave.
Can I ask you? So this is the kind of basic, very late night conversation, because when we had you for our goth mandate,
yes.
We couldn't talk about movies.
Right.
We couldn't talk about any of the shit because of the strike.
Right.
But I wanted to ask you, like, first of all, just straight up, like, what was the moment that you, like, knew you were, like, you could pay your bills being an actor?
Hmm.
Like, when did it happen?
So
Henry's waiting and he needs to know.
How do I get in there? They keep telling me this is going to be the one.
So I go, it's going to be a long story, but you asked a question that I feel like needs like a backstory to it. I go to Chicago from Kansas to study theater at DePaul Theater School. I developed this raging addiction to opiates during college. So by the time I get out,
I am
fucking just strung out and life sucks for a good couple of years. I finally get clean 5 years into that.
Congrats.
I decide, thank you. 22 years this year. I decide to go. I get invited by a friend to do a play, Storefront Theater, and a number of opportunities to do theater in Chicago that, you know, is free. So I was working as a telemarketer by day. I was doing, remember Time Life Books?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a telemarketer for Time Life Books.
It's so funny.
And at night, I was an usher in a movie theater, Webster Place Cinema in Chicago. And I, back when they still had the unionized projectionists, so I would go and hang out with the union projectionists and smoke cigarettes and watch movies up in the booth. It was awesome. The best.
Great.
So I get back on stage and I got an opportunity. A casting director literally said this. He's like, oh, my God, I thought you died. And I was like, well,
casting directors are great.
Still here. And he brings me in. I got a commercial. In 2006, it was when the transition happened for me. I got a commercial. I booked a commercial. It was a Singular wireless commercial. It was my first time ever on a set like that. And it was me and my future father-in-law having a phone call where he says something like, I'm looking forward to being your father-in-law. And I say, well, thanks, Jimbo, Jimmy Crack Corn, and I don't care. and the call drops. And then he's laughing, but I hear silence. So I'm like, oh, sorry. That commercial was directed by the director of my favorite documentary. And so when I got that job, not only did I get paid a good, you know, like, what do you get, a couple grand to do a commercial, but Chris Smith, who made American Movie, anyone who's listening that doesn't know American Movie, Coven, Coven sounds like oven, it's going to be called Coven.
Yeah.
So Chris, that commercial was a huge success. And I was able to transition into then doing theater full time, which was only paying like maybe $500 a week.
Yeah.
And those were good, like good theaters, but the commercial paid. So it was like, that was the moment when it went national, and back in those days, commercials paid a lot differently.
Oh, yeah.
That led into 2007. Casting director for The Dark Knight came to town and held a big casting call for all the creeps and weirdos. And He was casting the opening sequence with the bank heist with the clowns. And so that's what I was at a giant cattle call for. And his assistant, who's a lovely guy, saw me in the crowd. He goes, "You're in that Jimbo commercial." And I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "We were just talking about that." And he goes, "Hey, John Papsideris, legendary cashmere." He goes, "This is that guy." And he's like, "Oh yeah, you're really funny." And he kind of looks at my weird face and he's like, "Are you ready for the scene?" I was like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Come on." So he takes me in this room. I do this scene, which is a dummy scene.
Yeah.
But it's a guy being like, "Oh, this guy, whoever put me on this job, I heard he dresses up weird and he thinks he's going to get this money, blah, blah, blah."
Yeah.
And he was like, it was that moment, man, that like all actors dream of, that lottery moment when like the ball landed on the number that I called. Like, it was my lifelong collecting comic books, dreaming of cinema, being such a fan and hoping and praying that someday I'd be able to go chase that dream. And he says to me, "You're really good." He's like, "This is really good. Do me a favor. Go home tonight. Take all this shit you're doing. It's great, but you got to put it here."
And I'm pointing
to my eyes for those who are listening. He says, "Put it here." And that note made sense to me.
Because that's film acting. It's just taking all that energy and like...
It's a magnifying glass.
Yeah.
And I'm coming from the stage, you know?
Yeah.
So then I...
I came from years of being like, great, a little smaller.
Yeah. So I went home and I did that. I tried to figure out what that meant. The shaking of the leg and the twitch with the thing and all this. How do I put that in my eyes? Came back the next day, just me. And there's Christopher Nolan sitting in a small room and he's got a little handheld camcorder. And that happened. And it wasn't all like, you know, wine and roses because you know, I was not making much money. I didn't have a good rate. I was just making scale and occasionally getting jobs. So there was lots of unemployment collection and just going on hundreds of auditions. But that was the last time I had like a day job. And I transitioned into then being a full-time actor. Although I would say years like 2010, 2011, 2012, if I was, you know, there was years that I made $27,000 one year, $33,000 one
down.
Year.
It's weird.
It's wild.
But when you do stuff like, so do you feel like it's a thing of fate almost?
Yes.
That you ended up as like a genre
actor? I feel like it's a confluence of a lot of things. Do we gravitate towards the stuff that razzes our berries? Certainly. Do we move towards energetically and passionately the things that really inspire us? Were there times when I probably wasn't able to connect with material that I was auditioning for that wasn't stuff that spoke to me in a way that I could connect to stuff that did speak to me? And maybe a lifetime of studying and reading comic books and watching horror and sci-fi movies helped me understand that for me personally, the approach to genre was no different than it would be if I was doing Tennessee Williams or Shakespeare.
Yeah.
I would just give 100% in a way that you could get lost in the thing. So I think, but the fate, there's that thing. Like I know so many actors, and I'm not being humble. It's just, I know so many actors who just are more versatile, more can repeat emotional states of being, more have the capacity to do, you know, work that is far superior than my own.
Sure.
So why did I happen to be at that place on that day? Why did that all stuff come together? Who fucking knows, man?
Yeah.
It's a total head scratcher. I just try to be.
Well, you were ready for the moment.
Definitely was ready for the moment. I mean, if there's a character that I would be like, okay, yeah, give me five, I can do this. If you said like he's a Joker's henchman, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah,
in a
boss,
way that I think is
my head. Like, yeah, let's get the bet, boss. Yeah, that's my version.
Did you love the show? like the thought that when each villain had like his entire team had the matching outfits.
Yeah. Let's get them, boss. Yeah. Let's take the bet. Yeah, but did you have any FaceTime with Heath Ledger?
Oh yeah, a lot. In fact, I mean, I worked on The Dark Knight. I did like 3 or 4 days in Chicago. There's the big parade sequence.
Yeah.
That was a huge sequence. I mean, there's thousands of extras and tons of actors. My first day on a film set, you got to understand this, you guys. My first day on a film set, I have been told that they also gave dummy sides for the actual production. So I went to an office, signed away whatever, got these sides that said, "There he is, let's get him." I thought I was a driver in a truck. So I practiced for a week before. Every time I get in my car, I'd be like, let's get him. There he is. Let's get him. Like, that was the lines that I was ready to do. I show up, do my fitting the night before shooting, and I'm in a cop uniform with a big bullet hole in the leg. And I was like, why am I in a police uniform? And they're like, he's very secretive. You'll see. And
I come to work. How do I prepare, though?
On the day of work. And it says, and one of the producers comes to my trailer, gives me the sides for the day. And he says, so this is actually the scene we're doing. You have been with the Joker pretending to be policeman. And then you're doing, you know, shooting at the mayor, trying to kill the mayor. And you get shot in the leg and then you're going to be kidnapped. The first thing we shot was me in the back of the ambulance with Harvey Dent, Aaron Eckhart. And I look at the scene and it says, you know, he's asking me questions. It says all it says about the thug is like an intimidating thug.
Yeah.
The thug smirks. And then he asked me another question and it the way it was on the page felt like the thug had the upper hand in like an intimidation way.
Yeah.
And as you said, like my therapist often says to me, when the student is ready, the teacher arrives. When the moment is ready, I was ready for this thing because I'm looking at that going, I'm not more intimidating than Aaron Eckhart's like that big square jaw, he's muscly. He's like, he could totally intimidate the crap out of me. What's more intimidating, me trying to do a tough face smirk? What if you just giggle? Somebody says like, and I said, and what if I can't formulate the thoughts that I'm trying to say? What if interior is actually, I'd love to help. I'd love to be of service here. But the only thing that's going to come out of my mouth is just giggles because I've got some kind of condition that's almost like someone put a filter over my voice box. And how terrifying would that be?
Because you're working for the Joker.
Yeah. So
has to be a part of the interview process of working for the Joker is that you would have to be
a good giggle.
You have to be a creepy guy. You have to be fairly intimidating without necessarily, because he's not a big guy. You know, the Joker's like, he's asymmetrical.
Oh, God. Such an incredible. I mean, yeah. So that's what I did. And luckily liked it. And then it just went from there. And I was so.
But was Heath in character the entire time?
He was not in character. He was so sweet. See, so I went in hair and makeup. Yeah. My first day on a film set, I walk in hair and makeup. Heath Ledger's at the far end. He's playing. I don't know if they were taking turns DJing or what, but he was playing this really cool music, which I didn't know. And I'm a big music guy. So I was fascinated by like, who is this that he's listening to? Next to him is Christian Bale. Next to him is Gary Oldman.
I can feel the vomit like rising to my throat.
Next to him is Aaron Eckhart, then me, then Maggie Gyllenhaal, and then Nestor Carbonell, all in this long ass hair and makeup trailer. Peter Rob King is overseeing and coming and doing touches up. Peter Rob King is the legendary makeup designer and artist who did Legend and Alien and Temple of Doom and all these movies. And Heath. Totally like welcome, shakes my hand, very nice. Chris, everybody was so cool, but with Heath in particular, because we had more time together. Like, I haven't held guns since I was a kid. I always really didn't like guns. I grew up around guns where I lived as a kid, but they just never were my thing. But I'm having to like do this rifle work and I felt intimidated, nervous that I had to do all this stuff. And he took all this time to show me like what he had learned about how to make stuff look cool when you're working with the guns. We talked about music. I was able to say like, you know, have you gotten to see any cool shows? And I think he was sneaking around and going to some of the cooler like venues, like probably under a cap and whatever, sunglasses. The band he was listening to was because it's 2007. I'd never heard of Animal Collective, who I now love. Yeah, and he turned me on to Animal Collective and Panda Bear. And we talked about, he said he was just talking about his kid and he asked if I had any, and I said, "Oh man, I don't think I could do that." And he said some really nice stuff to me, like you'll always think that. And then you know, I feel like you'd actually be pretty good at it. And I think when it happens, it'll be. And here's the thing about an actor like Heath Ledger that I want to be around people like that every time I go to work, because you got two schools of thought. You got one actor here on set who's pacing around, who is taking a deep breath and jumping up and down and getting in character and yelling at people. And
I'm the Batman.
Bale was actually, Bale no, was actually really
the Batman. No, Christian. So let him tell you different.
He used to come to work by grappling hook.
No, Bale was super chill. Actually, he wasn't like that. But I've been around those actors. Do you know what I mean? Like you've been around those guys who are just
you're
like,
Jeremy Strongs of the world.
Oh my God, it's exhausting.
They're pain
it's,
in the butt.
All of the energy is sucked into them and their needs and their process. And you've got gaffers trying to work on some light shit, and these guys are, I'm ready. It's now. I'm in my zone.
I'm ready to fuck.
Yeah. It's hard. So Heath is talking to me about, you know, music and bands and like his voice, his dialect, his Australian, you know, dialect. And he's talking. And then they're like, oh, Heath, we're, you know, ready. And then he's like, oh, I got to go. And he's like, just turning a little knob in his brain, his little masterful genius brain of being that caliber of an artist that he could then go and become this thing, this entity, this thing that transcended just like a movie villain. It wasn't just a, it embodied something that just tapped into everybody that saw that freaking movie. It did something to all of us. And I was just watching in awe. And then I thought about it because I remember when he got, oh, this was the best moment I had with him actually. Remember when I heard that he got cast in the role and I honestly was like, what?
Well, we all
were.
I said to him, I think this is why he liked me. First thing I said, we meet, he's very nice, very soft-spoken. He's not outgoing by any means, but he was definitely warm and kind. And I said, how's it going? Are you having fun? And he said, I'm having the most fun. I mean, the best time. And I said, I got to be honest. When I heard you got this role, I thought it was a terrible idea. And he goes, me too. And he, and I remember thinking like, wait, the Knight's Tale guy is going to be handsome, like, 10 things like I hate about you. But then you go back and you watch 10 things I hate about you. You watch Brokeback, you watch Monsters Ball. And you're like, he was like our Brando, our James Dean. I even said that when I left, I went home and to my ex, I said something to the effect of, I feel like I just spent a week with James Dean.
Yeah.
There's somebody that just, he had two scoops of it, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I just love that him just like full Joker makeup. He's like, you know, Animal Collective is like unbelievable. It's fucking great.
All right.
Live from your grave.
This is more Chris Farley show elements.
Sure.
I'm going to add more.
That was cool.
That's cool. You did that.
Remember when you did.
So you've worked with some of the hottest names, right?
Hottest names in the biz.
Unfortunately, I think the worm's eye is going to need to turn to Dune.
Yeah, please. How much you love Dune.
How was it? Because my brief foray into the world of Dune showed me that a lot of these, I'm going to go ahead and say young gentlemen that are into Dune are nuts, right? Like they're nuts about the content. Like when you got, or like, all right, we're going to do Dune. Like, did you ever, like, because now you've been in a lot of nerd things before you got Dune. Mm-hmm. So you're used to the internet as a whole, like handling what you're doing.
Sure.
Right. Like, how does it feel to step into the role of fucking like Brad Dourif?
Yeah.
Right. You're taking over for Brad Dourif, who's
so intimidating.
It's really intimidating.
He is just, when you look at his resume and you think about every magical piece of freaking pixie dust he threw on every film he was in, and you look at just the, it's insane.
Chucky, he elevates child's play.
Certainly does.
Like he makes that a movie.
Every Deadwood monologue that he has is unbelievable.
He's the best character.
I just saw Earl Brown yesterday, who was also on Deadwood, and I meant to ask him for all, like, what was it like seeing some of the Dourif stuff? Because he's just it doesn't matter what it was, the David Lynch stuff, you name it. He is incredible. Yes, I want to work with him. Somebody cast me in something with Brad. And his daughter's a great actor, too.
Really
She's
good.
Cool. Yeah.
She's really
what
does
good. She do?
She's an actor. She was doing Chucky. She was on this new TV series about Chucky. Yeah. She,
That's awesome. He could play your dad.
Yeah. That would be so rad, man. Like, so
dude,
the story about that is really interesting because Denis. Because
it's the best character almost in the book besides Baron.
It's a great character. Yes. Denis cast me in Prisoners based on an audition tape, but he had recognized me from The Dark Knight, and we became fast friends and bonded quickly, and he kills me brutally in Prisoners. I mean, it's a brutal death.
Yes.
Then He emails me several years later in a really interesting way, at a really critical moment in my life when I was trying to decide between doing a big television series that didn't speak to me at all to make a lot of money or going to make my little indie film, All Creatures Here Below. And I was erring on the side of All Creatures, and that was getting a lot of flack. That was at the point where I knew I didn't really want to work with agents anymore.
Yeah.
And then he emailed me and said, I killed you in Prisoners. I want to bring you into the year 2049 and kill you in Blade Runner 2049. I was like, oh my God. So then we do Blade Runner 2049, and then he's prepping Dune, and I knew he was making Dune. He'd spoken about Dune as far back as when I first met him, and like that had been his thing. Like as a kid, that was the thing that just was his, it was his thing.
It
was
he already understands it.
Oh, he lived in it since he was a kid. And he goes, all right, I'm ready to kill you again really brutally. And he sent me a piece of concept art that was really beautiful of me, but dead, like post-poison.
My friend Sam. Full-out shot when they're closing the door. God, after so the poison. Great. It's great. You know, it's great. Yeah.
Sam Hudecki does all of Denis' concept arts, and he was like working on the worms and doing all that stuff. Like that was rad. So the news, I don't remember how it like came out or how people responded to it, but I don't think I paid much mind to that. It was all, I was my own biggest fear. It was just the thought of like stepping into the shoes of, because Brad did such an incredible job with the role in Lynch's Dune. And
he drinks the drink, it sets his mind in motion, which they should have given you that.
I wanted that speech. I really wanted that speech. I had two really big scenes, sadly, that were cut out of Dune. One is Piter drinking the Sappho juice on the night of the invasion when we come back to reclaim. And so what's happening is
more
all of Iraq, like the palace is just being fucking carpet bombed, and all of the Atreides are getting slaughtered by the beast. And I'm standing on this like precipice looking out at all of it, just sipping my Sappho. And I've got Thufir Hawat.
Yeah.
Bound and like on his knees in front of me. And I got to give this long, luscious monologue about, you know, playing chess and why I'm always six steps ahead of you and I would have won. And sadly, when we were doing reshoots, Denis said to me, he's like, David, you were so great. That scene was so beautiful. But like, it just stopped the pace of this invasion. He's like, there's this huge action happening and all of a sudden it stops. So he's like, I gotta cut it. And the other thing that got cut, which was not in the book. It was a scene that Denis was just playing with just creatively. But I think it would have been really fun. I wish it had made it. Is that he gave me this like torture organ where I'm playing this like torture organ and you can't see who it is that I'm torturing. But then the beast comes up and he's like, stop wasting time with all this stupid games that you play. And I'm like, you don't understand what I'm doing. Because what it ultimately was that I was doing is I had Yue's wife.
Yes.
And
was
I
the
am
connection.
Torturing her. But with some kind of, but what was
is
so genius.
Is it like
genius,
the opposite of the orgasm organ and the opposite, Barbarella?
Exactly. The exact opposite. So yeah, man, that was a dream come true. And now part two comes out. I'm going to go see it next week. And
oh,
I'm
yeah.
dying to, yeah. So
he's going to shave your eyebrows off for
again,
the,
yeah. I'll do it. I'll do it. Yeah.
They're actually held on by magnets. Yeah. You actually can't see. It's for ready removal for film.
These caterpillars? Yeah. There's no magnet strong enough, man.
It's the magic.
Like, what is that actor who was in American Beauty that played the guy that's banging Kevin, that's banging Annette Bening? He's the real estate guy. I love that actor. Yeah.
I
feel like he and I have the most pronounced eyebrows in all of entertainment.
It's what pays the money.
Peter Gallagher. Thank you.
Yes.
Peter Gallagher.
And you're,
not to be confused with Gallagher.
Gallagher.
It's actually two names. Anything else? Because I want to make sure, because we're going to get you out of here soon, but I can't
don't
let you leave.
Dare.
I mean, I do want to ask you.
Please.
David Lynch.
Just
okay,
talk
so here's,
on him.
Here's the story.
This is my, yeah.
I love this
you know
story.
We're obsessed
I
with
love
him.
This story.
I
love this story.
We're obsessed with David Lynch. We're obsessed with Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks is my only
you should
fandom.
Be. If you're not obsessed with Twin Peaks, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
I came to, okay, so I'd done The Dark Knight. I had this history in the theater and my obsessions with the things that I get obsessed about. And I come to Los Angeles in 2010. I went to New York briefly. met Eve in New York. We moved out to LA in 2010. And I took on this because no one would sign me. I was like, I've been in a movie. I couldn't get an agent. I couldn't get a manager. I was just going to workshops where you pay 25 or 40 bucks to get to do scenes in front of a casting director usually. And I would wake up every day because I was still had enough from the commercials to like keep myself afloat. And I was submitting myself through Actors Access, through all these things. And I put these goals up on like a poster board of stuff I've got to do this week. And whatever. How do I keep myself motivated? Making a lot of short films with my friend Colin, who went on to direct Animals and All Creatures Here Below and is now making all kinds of stuff. But like, I had three. I said, you got it. Goals to me have always worked this way. It's like I have the life goals, then I have the annual goals. And then I have the like, what's going on month to month, week to week, and sometimes even day to day, right? It's just how I run business.
For as a creative, trying to make it in creative business, because it's like, you know, practical, you kind of break it down to a bunch of practical steps. And then what's the big dream?
And I would wake up some days and be like, there's nothing for me to submit for here. There's nothing good happening here. And how am I going to do it? So what can I, if I ever am at a loss, look at those three big life goals and go, what could I do today to just get myself closed out? Read a book about it, do da 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 da. So the three life goals were, one, work with the Muppets.
Yes.
It's still a goal of mine. I saw the Muppet movie as a kid in the theater and it changed my life. I remember Sweetums running through the screen at the end and thinking he was in the space with us. That's the first song I ever sang on a stage was the Rainbow Connection in kindergarten. Changed my life.
What a creepy child.
Yeah. It totally taught me comic timing.
It's a brilliant movie. It's a masterpiece. Next to 2001, those are my two, like, if I said, this is magic of what movies can do to show my kids. And then James Bond villain. Yeah. So that's up there. And then in the middle was to work with David Lynch. That was one of the goals. So every time I'd be looking at the things and going, oh, what am I doing? So here's these Actors Access submissions where you, for those listening who don't know what that means, it's just you're an actor and you're paying usually a fee to be able to submit yourself to be considered to possibly get a chance to audition for something that doesn't even probably pay anything.
Yeah.
That's the joy of being an actor. So I saw this breakdown and every time there would come one, I would just do the diligence of going, okay, well, if there's a casting director, quote unquote, attached, I could at least do the research and see if that person maybe has connections somewhere, has worked on anything. And there was a USC short film. I can't remember what it was about or what the title was, but I did like the due diligence and I would cross-reference things. And I see that the casting director is a woman named Krista Huzar, who, when I Googled her, I saw that she worked for Joanna Rae, who was David Lynch's casting director.
This is extremely good advice, guys. I want you to remember that if you are trying to make it, this is how you do.
And I go, oh my God. And I submit myself for this thing and I get to go audition for it. Now, the script that I was sent, I couldn't understand really what I was doing in it. And it didn't necessarily connect with me, but it was cool. It was a weird, very arty script. So I really prepared the fuck out of it. I mean, I came ready and I went in. And I gave it all I had. And the director was a USC student. This is for a student film, by the way. There was no pay. You were going to get credit and a DVD of the short film.
Yeah.
And I did some adjustments. And then I thanked Krista. And I knew her from where I'd gone to the audition, what her office was. So I sent a postcard saying, like, thank you so much. You know, I'm a massive fan of Lynch. So I just know how honored I was to get a chance to even show you anything, blah, 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 blah. Years go by. I'm continuing to hone my craft and do work on projects and blah, blah, blah. And in 2016, I was in Chicago doing a short stint on a play and I get a call that I, was going to get an audition for a top secret thing for, Showtime. And they wouldn't tell me anything about it. And I went to go back to LA and I go to like the Deep Valley to this office and sign like all these NDAs. And there's all these famous actors coming in and out of this audition room.
It's like, is this where we suck the dick to get in the Bohemian Grove?
Speaking of Bohemian Grove, just you wait till late night with the devil. Yeah. I want every time we say it too, we have to say late night with the devil.
The
trailer is incredible because they find that perfect 70s.
That guy's voice is so
perfect. 70s, and they put the perfect crackle on it.
So I go in this room, and there is Joanna Rae in all of her glory, this incredible casting director, and there's a camcorder and a couch, and I'm like, she goes, and she sits me down. There's no copy. There's no audition sides. She goes, tell us what you did this morning. And I go, okay, well, I woke up with my kid and I We watched The Muppet Show. This is a true story. We watched The Muppet Show. It was the, we watched the Alice Cooper and the Vincent Price episodes because I love the spooky stuff. And what, you know, we talked about that a little bit and asked me a couple other questions and then turns off. And I know at this point that that is the process for David Lynch's auditions. He doesn't do scripted sides. He does conversational stuff.
He just wants to see you.
Yeah. 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 So so she ends and she goes, that was great. And she goes, do you know why you're here? And I go, this isn't the David Lynch, like Twin Peaks thing, is it? And she goes, yes, it is. But do you know why you're here? And I was like, I don't. And she's like, and sitting like in the corner is this woman, a little pack of her, like, acting, you know, names that she remembers. It's Krista Huzar, who had been the assistant in, who had been at that casting, who remembered me.
That is how it works.
And brought me in for this. I get to go be on set with David.
So they just book you from that.
They booked me from that. That's and it's awesome. A really cool role. And we shot.
Yeah, it's an awesome role. It's great.
I went for my first day. We parked at the Prince Hotel, which is this great place in K-Town. They have this incredible Korean chicken. If you've never been, you guys got to go to the Prince. It's amazing. I love it. It's the best. And then we shot at the LA Times building, what was supposed to be offices of the casino, me and Brett Gelman. And then comes Kyle MacLachlan. And here's David. And David's like, he is everything I ever, I don't know. It's just, he's like a messiah to me. He's such a hero, such a guru. And I get to go introduce myself. I'm super nervous, as typical me. And we start working together and I'm watching him and I'm like, this is everything that you could dream. This is what the experience was like for me. It's like when imagine if Dorothy, like Toto runs over and yanks on the curtain at the Wizard of Oz and you go and you pull the curtain back. But instead of some janky dude pulling a bunch of levers and nodules, it's even more magical than what you saw with that big green head.
Cause I heard he's like funny and light.
Funny, light, warm, open, totally knows exactly what this was a 700 and something page script that she didn't shoot it like episodes of a TV show. He shot a 760 some page movie that he was then going to cut later into episodes of a TV show. So he would say something like, someone would have a question and he'd be like, well, that's because on the scene that da 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 da, we're going back to this page and da da. And you're like, he knew everybody's lines. He knew exactly what he needed in every moment. And you watch him work with someone like Kyle and he's like, okay, Kale, in this moment, you're going to put your hands on the table and slowly rise to face one another. And you follow him. You just do it because he knows exactly what he needs. And watching the way their dynamic work together.
It's like evil Wes Anderson.
But here's and David, he still smokes. And he was carrying always an ashtray. And like, I think by rules of whatever location we're at, had to carry a little fire extinguisher around with him. And he would say, instead of once more for instead of one, they always go like, once more, what do they say?
For safety.
Yeah. Instead of that, he'd go, okay, once more for security. and then at one point he went up to the roof of the, and we had this PA who was so sweet helping me get me like sodas and blah, blah, blah. Just like a guy being a helper, working so hard. I was watching this guy run around and bust his ass all day. And I saw David sneaking up to the roof to have a cigarette. And I was like, oh, could I have a cigarette? He's like, oh yeah, you have to go up to the roof. And I go up there and there's David standing there, like staring out at the city of Los Angeles, like puffing on his cigarette. And I'm standing with this kid, not a kid, he was in his 20s, but, And he said, he's making conversation. He's so nice. And he said, do you have a family? I said, yeah. He said, you have kids? I go, yeah, I've got a son named Arlo. And he turns, he goes, hey, dad. And I realized this is David's son. Who is this filmmaker in his own right who was just busting ass and helping out for the day? And he goes, he's got a kid named Arlo. Oh, that's a wonderful name. What is that from? And I say where the story of Arlo's name comes from. He goes, you know, Monsanto, I think they may have been responsible for the tainted spinach at the Chipotle restaurants. and I go, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's bet. Like, yeah. he goes on this, like, he's in a thought about Monsanto. and about GMOs and about all this stuff.
I just didn't, you sitting there like,
and,
yeah.
And this is the last, I got to tell you guys, this is so good. So then we went to the Morongo Casino out in the desert.
Yeah.
And we lived that's where there that together. Was shot. We all lived in the hotel. And then we'd have for lunch, we'd have the buffet together. And we're shooting at one point. And he's sitting at monitor 5 feet away from me. And I'm over his shoulder just staring at him. And in my brain, I thought, okay, man, I know you've got power. If you can hear me right now, give me a sign.
Yeah.
Give me a sign, David. Please give me a sign. Give me a sign. And I just sat and I waited and I waited. And all of a sudden, this is, I swear on all that I know, he goes, and just wiles at me.
He just smiles at you.
Yeah, he smiles at me. Oh. I was like, he's magic. He's magic. And he's
plugged in. He's deeply plugged in.
We all should be. His work with meditation and the subconscious and getting into
TM?
Who we are and being present. I don't do TM. I've begun a meditation journey, though. My friend Steve Agee does TM, yeah. And he would like, I think I might try it, but what I'm getting out of
my wife Natalie does TM. She
meditation right yeah. now has been immensely helpful for me in working on just a lot of the stuff that I'm kind of going through and working through, like psychologically and yeah. you know, therapy stuff.
Oh
and
yeah,
it's really helpful.
You ever do autoerotic asphyxiation?
Well,
there's another because that really centers me. Yeah.
The carotene. Yeah. I was always afraid of participating in that activity because I'm not a guy to say no to anything. I was just like, there's that terrifying reality that you're going to be performing an interview with the police and you're they're like, she said please
she
choke.
She begged me to choke him.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
you're an SVU episode.
Uh-huh. Okay, hands behind your back, sir. Yeah.
I'm an actor.
We got an actor here. Oh, they know. Oh! They're the first ones to call TMZ. Are you kidding me?
Oh, man,
they get a tip fee for that.
No, yeah, that's why I always put a plastic bag over my head before we begin,
smart.
Just to kind of get me in the headset, the mindset of doing the show.
Oxygen is everything.
I am so happy. This has been awesome.
This has been great. Thank you so much for coming out.
Oh, I want to keep doing it again. I want to
thank you for letting us ask all the corny questions that we can't ask you, like when we're just hanging out.
That was so. And last time it was pretty fun, you guys. We had a great response to the goth. Lee and I getting to talk about our comic book and all that nerdness was so fun. And I was sad that we couldn't talk about all the other stuff, like the Dune of it all or the other movies of it all.
Yes.
And because I know they're listening, a big shout out and thanks to Eve and Karen for always turning me on to you guys. And now I'm so turned on.
Oh, thank you.
So Late Night with the Devil. When is the official
March 22nd in cinemas near you. Be the first person. Don't scream too loud. For Late Night with the Devil.
Ooh. It's gonna be good. It's gonna freak people out. And I love, you know, we love the devil.
It's fun. It's a fun movie too. And then the stuff that it draws from and the reality behind it is it's really disturbing. So it's right up your alley.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I'm excited for the sequel, The Morning Show with the Devil.
Yeah, I mean we already have one.
Joe Scarborough.
What's the weekend? No, it's the Sunday morning with the devil.
Yeah. It's like the McLaughlin group.
Church sucks, right?
Yeah, actually, this devil guy's making a lot of sense.
I will say, one of the most jarring experiences of me moving to LA is I like to watch KTLA in the morning for the traffic. Sure. And then just you showing up on a Paisley set in full goth gear, talking to Sam.
Yeah, you know? Talking Hollywood. Yeah, the Hollywood Minute.
Yeah.
The Hollywood Minute. No, it'd be better, even better. Like, forget Jim Lehrer. What if it was NewsHour with the Devil?
With the Devil.
Oh, there's a lot of variations on this now we got to do.
Sports Center with the Devil.
With the Devil.
Well, thank you. Namaste.
To catch a predator with the Devil.
With
Namaste.
The Devil.
No, thank you.
All right. Hail Satan.
No, thank you.
Oh, and Hecky.
Hail David.
Yeah, you did good work. Yeah. Really good work today. Really good work today.
Really good work. Yes. I feel good about myself.
Thank you for not sucking.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.